Hare Krishna, this is Dhanadhar Swami. I'm sorry, a little bit late. Can I have a friendly voice?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, friendly voice.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. Wow. So great to hear in the Holy Dham. I think it's conducive for my studies because I'm in one place also, so it creates more enthusiasm to share. Reading from the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, Section 2, Practice, Sutra 15. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Harinama Tapa Samskara Dukai Guna Vritti Varodhaccha Dukam Evasavam Vivekana. For one who has discrimination, everything is a suffering on account of the suffering produced by the consequences of action, by pain itself, and by the samskaras, as well as on account of the suffering ensuing from the turmoil of the vrittis due to the gunas. Om Jnanatimarandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Kaksuram Malatamyena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Gishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Vibhati Sapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayebhakya Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from... Excuse me one second. Greetings from Govardhan, a very nice spiritual program, especially in the afternoon from 4 to 7. I come at 5:30. There's just discussion, reading and discussion of Shastra, led by Vaisheshika Prabhu, in this case, Sri Bharti Maharaj, Jai Bhaita Swami, and just a lot of other people that just come and hear Srila Prabhupada's books, the different scriptures, and then, enlivening discussions. Always nice to hear Jai Bhaita Swami's, I think the word is laconic, it means very terse and anyway, it's been very nice, and Prabhupada said Vrindavan is meant for bhajan, and what to speak of Govardhan Hill. So, I haven't been that steady, but fortunately, Mahamuni Prabhu has been beginning enlivening classes that are certainly in relationship to the subject here. Now, we're discussing Kriya Yoga, and it mentions that Kriya Yoga, the yoga of action, is necessary to bring you to the point of meditative absorption. Actually, you cannot really perform yoga in its classic definition until you achieve a certain level of focus and a real certain level of focus and concentration. So therefore, the threefold path of the Kriya Yoga, which we've gone over, which includes exactly gentle but not harsh austerity, celibacy, and surrender to the guru, and simple life, and swadhyaya, study and chanting of appropriate mantras, and Ishvara Pranidhan, which in this case, it's mentioned in the first chapter as an worshiping God as meditation on mantra, but here it's mentioned as selfless action, but selfless action, a kind of karma yoga, but karma yoga dedicated to God. And the result of that is it will bring you towards samadhi, and the kleshas are destroyed. And now we're into a discussion of the kleshas, which are the foundation of the bondage of the pure soul with the impure body, and therefore the cause of all difficulty and all trouble. And those are five, which we should know by now, which is avidya, ignorance, asmita, ego, the taking the instrument of the senses to be the seer itself. Your mind is, you know, going all over the place, and you think that that's actually your soul. And then raga, attachment, your memories of pleasure, and therefore your desire for those objects that cause pleasure, dvesha, aversion, your memories of pain and your desire to avoid the objects that gave you pain, even if those objects that caused you distress were good for you, and you seek the objects of attachment even if they were harmful for you. And then finally, the Sanskrit, but clinging to life. And that memory, that special attachment of the fear of death, the aversion to death, it impels one psychologically in so many ways to identify with the body. And then it gave a description of how kleshas, these foundational conceptions, material conceptions, how they're really the cause of karma, good and bad karma. And there's an elaborate description of that, but if one can become free from that ego, that identification with the mind as the self, then one is free from karma, because that's actually what causes karma. Acting on that basis, basically, disturbed for the material concept of life. And if you act on that platform, and obviously the reaction, karma itself, is meant to help you eventually destroy the kleshas. And then it mentions, I'm going to get, for me, it's pretty quick getting to today's verse. that karma was actually three. And as long as the kleshas exist, it fructifies. In other words, in this life, as long as you don't get rid of the kleshas, especially avidya, they're progressive, it is. Avidya causes ego, ego causes attachment and aversion, clinging to death. So as long as the root, this ignorance, exists, then it carries you over into your next life. Three things will be determined: your birth, that means your nature and the whole thing that comes along with your birth, your life span, and your bhoga, your enjoyment and suffering. Those things will remain, and you'll get a new body. And I don't know. I have memories. I do have some memories of me in the crib, and I don't want to do that again. Be locked up in that little child cage, and then, you know, go through life and so much ignorance and therefore so much suffering, and have to learn so many lessons. You know, I've worked hard in my life, in spiritual life. I have a little realization now. You know, I'd hate to go through that again, and I don't think many of us also. And these type of things, your birth, your span of life, and your life experience, they bear the fruits of pleasure and pain. And as a result of that, you know, we do good and we do bad. We become entangled. So because this is the Yoga Sutras, and it's really dealing with the path of Nivritti Marg, or the path of detachment, is also the path of Pravritti Marg, the regulated, prescribed fulfillment of desires to purify one of them. But this is the yogi. And it's also relevant for all of us. It says that, because it says it produces pleasure, now the Yoga Sutra says, one hour's description, everything is suffering. And it gives the reason why. Consequences of pleasure, the pain itself that comes with pleasure, the samskaras of pleasure and what they do, and the mind, which is agitated for pleasure, the vrittis. And later on, this is an elaborate purport, and I'm only going to do one verse today. An example is given. It's just like a person takes sweets, but he has diabetes or he has a bad stomach. So eating those sweets for an ignorant person is pleasure, but really, it's the result of that pleasure is going to be a lot of pain. So the intelligent person, the yogi, it says here, vivikina, one who is discrimination, he sees right off the bat that when we go for material pleasure, it is pain. It's a realization. And people who are in spiritual life, they're very careful about how they enjoy, because they are completely yogis. They're completely aware of all the suffering it causes. What to speak of the attachment to the body, and therefore the deep experience of death when we lose this body, and what to speak of the temporary nature of the pleasuring, so the frustration when it ends. Has anybody here had a pleasure that lasted? And the entanglement in karma. So an intelligent person sees this very, very clearly. And it's a long purport, and it's worth going over somewhat extensively. Professor Bryan's purports are so good. They're one of the few books that practically I can just read out loud because it's just so clear, at least some of these sections. So, you know, Patanjali here, it's kind of a, Professor Bryant describes it as a bit of a radical statement that everything is suffering by the wise. I think the wise would see everything as pleasure. The wise do see everything also as they're not frustrated in the world. They certainly don't indulge in sense gratification. But they realize the consequences of sense gratification. So in the previous verse, I'm kind of almost reading from it a little bit. Most of pious activities produce pleasure. But lest anyone take this to indicate that the pursuit of pleasure through piety is a fitting goal of life, informs the reader that the so-called pleasure of prakriti is only being pleasure relative to pain. In other words, its pleasure is not in itself. The nature of its pleasure is relative to another experience of suffering called pain. But one who has discrimination, even the so-called pleasure of birth, Boga, your experiences and lifespan, mentioned the last sloka, is all suffering. And this pleasure, Professor Bryant writes, is particularly insidious because the memories of that pleasure propel one to try to recreate the experience, and you perpetuate the samsara, the cycle of karma, that is really giving so much suffering. A nice definition of vivek, it comes from the word vik, to separate. So those who possess discrimination can separate the soul from matter. And therefore they can see that even the pleasure pursued in this world is material, and therefore part of the problem of identification with the part of the main problem, which is the identifying that which is eternal and pure with that which is temporary and impure, which is the cause of suffering. All yogic traditions describe the world as a place of frustration. Professor Bryant likes the word rather than suffering, frustration. And Purport's really nice. This perception of the world as a place of frustration is there in all yogic traditions. And it's a nice little list, you know, different references, because that's what a good scholar does. The first noble truth of Buddhism, Sarva Dukkham, all is suffering. So it contains the exact same terms adopted by Patanjali. And the other three noble truths, maybe there's four noble truths, are predicated upon the first, that there is a cause of this suffering, that there's a possibility of putting an end to this suffering, and that there's a path to accomplish the removal of the suffering. So Buddhism is based on the same conception. And then goes to the Upanishads, quotes, everything is grief, the Gita, Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam, place of suffering which is temporary, the Sankhya Karakas, the first verse, which is very interesting. Because of the torment of the threefold dukkhas, the desire to know the means of counteracting them arises. So there's a nice thing that comes up, the relationship between suffering and the impetus to get out of the suffering condition. Because it's all suffering, but some people sometimes are in the illusion that there's happiness. And we see that. It's all suffering. In fact, anyway, we'll come to that, but there's a... In Nyaya Sutras, suffering is one of the nine objects of right knowledge, and liberation is defined as the removal of suffering. So, so this recognition of the world as a place of suffering is a preliminary realization of the place for the path of yoga. Motivate one to seek fulfillment elsewhere and to take up the rigors and the challenges of the past. And if you don't have this realization, it's very unfortunate, because you simply, you know, are on a path to enjoy the world, and you're in the illusion that somehow or other the path of material enjoyment will actually lead to fulfillment. Even if we look in the future, what do we think? I'll be happy if this material problem solved and that material problem solved and that. But first of all, they never solve, because Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam, first of all, it's a place of suffering and it's temporary. So let's say you solve every single problem you have. You don't solve the problem of old age, and you don't solve the problem of death. And therefore, if you have your attachments fulfilled, they only cause suffering, because they're temporary and they're going to be taken away. So it's kind of, in the material world, a situation of damned if you do and damned if you don't. Then, so now it describes of why it's suffering. And the first reason is parinam, because the result of pleasure, the consequence of pleasure, is suffering. So the first commentator is Vyas. So he's going to examine this, the nature of suffering and pleasure. And he says, pleasure means attachment to the objects that give pleasure. This attachment motivates action and therefore produces karma. An aversion to suffering is the flip side, the attempt to avoid the object that caused suffering, but it's still fruitive, it's still selfish activity, and therefore it produces karma. And then it's ultimately unfulfilling, and therefore there's frustration. So,
Vyas points out that the senses are never satisfied. And indulgence is like increases the attachment just as fuel to the fire. So these demands, because the attachment is suffering, and you're trying to alleviate it by the fulfillment, but the fulfillment only increases the attachment. So it only increases the suffering. So one remains even more frustrated. And therefore, the Gita, it quotes that the eternal enemy, insatiable as fire. Indulgence can't get ultimate pleasure. And one who becomes addicted to indulging in the senses is immersed in dissatisfaction and frustration. Let me just read. He said, from this perspective, the experience of any happiness, even our, quote, Kodak moments, I guess, take that picture of you enjoying someplace that we all have now. By the grace of modern technology, we can capture all the ecstasy we had in life. And it's called Kodak map, which appears so satisfying at the moment, are changing or temporary. So you're smiling, but then you leave the place and you suffer. When it passes, therefore, frustration. And now, Prachaspati Mishra continues this theme. And he points out that attachment to pleasure is itself a source of pain because one is never satisfied with what one has and constantly craves additional objects of pleasure. Then you therefore you crave more and more. Same point is there. Bhagavad Gita, what does it say? Happiness derived from the content appears like nectar in the beginning, but in the end becomes like poison. So this is classic philosophy. I do want to leave time for questions here. Maybe I'll stop now for questions, and then I can even continue. Anybody like to ask any questions? Come on in. One second. Anybody like to ask any questions? Anybody there? Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
No, I'm on the phone, but yeah. No, come. Yeah, who is it? One second. Who's that here? It's so funny because I'm on the phone asking who's there and you're answering. But it's great. Okay. Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Okay, Gail, ask your question.
No, I'm just letting you know somebody is here.
Oh, okay. You want me to go on?
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Very well.
Okay. One second. You're seeing how this goes. What? We see you.
No.
I'll be done in about 20 minutes. Just one. That's up to you. I can. I'll be right there. I'll get back here.
So there's four types. One second, I got it. Okay. So the second type of suffering is tapa. And this tapa refers involuntary pain, not sometimes in spiritual life we say tapa as a voluntary. Which is also, tapa is one of the ingredients of Kriya Yoga, which we mentioned. So, and the classic three, which you can't avoid once you're in the world, is adibhautik, adidaivaka, adhyatmika, suffering produced by one's own body and mind, adibhautika, adidaivaka, suffering produced by nature, storms or earthquakes, and the suffering produced by other living entities, which through the body, speech, and mind, one suffers even sometimes troublesome family members, loved ones, etc. And Vigyan Dikshu says, a small amount of suffering is felt more than abundance of pleasure. So aversion to pain is stronger than desire for pleasure. So, very interesting concept that even if one tries to enjoy in the world pleasure, because it's attached to suffering, one actually suffers. Because the small amount of suffering is felt so much more than an abundance of pleasure. In the Yoga Sutras, which is a very, yoga begins at a very renowned stage. So, it's very, very, it's just explaining now that there's a path called Kriya Yoga. But you can't begin at yoga. Yoga is a very meditative absorption, a very high stage. I have an audience now, so I'm just keeping them up to date. It's a very, very high stage. So you can't really benefit from yoga, that level of meditation, until you become purified. So it says Kriya Yoga. It's a yoga of action, which is in simple austerity, worship of God, and study. And that will purify you and bring you to that point. But then it says that this Kriya Yoga, it will destroy the kleshas and bring you samadhi. And the kleshas are the fundamental foundation of material life that binds you to the body, which is ignorance, ego, attachment, aversion, and clinging to life. And now it's in a discussion where the kleshas, it describes how they cause karma. And it says by karma, three things happen. You get, if you don't destroy the kleshas, then you're carried to the next life. And three things will be determined by your karma: your birth, your enjoyment, and your lifespan. And then those experiences, experiences can be pleasure or pain. Can be pleasure or you could do bad karma. But here in this verse, what he wants to explain is that a real yogi understands that even pleasure is pain. And the example is given like a sweet. if someone has like a diabetes or bad stomach, that person understands that even that pleasure is actually pain. So it's describing it. It's very, very heavy how all pleasure in this world is actually pain. A yogi realizes that. He can see it very clearly. And he describes first, and there's four results of the pleasure. You can see that. So that one is the consequence. You can just see that the joy in the world, it's temporary. You're going to be frustrated. And it's also going to cause karma and so many things. So now he's in this section called the second cause, the suffering of pain, because it's all mixed. No matter what you do, it's mixed, because you have to enjoy in this world, and it's adivotik, adivadik. You enjoy in this world, you're going to get it. You're going to get it from the from the cheating people and the... It's over. You know, you're going to get it no matter what. And then, you know, it makes the point, this especially, that a small amount of suffering is felt more than an abundance of pleasure. So he's and now what he's going to mention too, and furthermore, the pursuit of pleasure and the avoidance of pain. You know, that's what you enjoy. You enjoy by fulfilling your attachments and avoiding your... He says that's inevitably is going to lead to an aggression. It's going to cause harm somehow or other, even if some benefit, and therefore it just binds you to karma. This is kind of like, almost like, you know, classic giant greatness law, you know, the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. You know, most of the people that listen, you know, are obviously married. We're not preaching renunciation, but this is the path that Nivritti Mark. These are yogis. And that type of understanding also has to be mixed in with what we do in the world. I mean, you know, and then we can live a balanced life. So he states that pleasure can attain only at some direct or indirect cost of harm to others. And thus the seeds of aggression are added to one's store of karma. And then he describes in household life, and this is from Manu Samhita, the five slaughterhouses of household life. The fireplace. You make a fire, you kill living entities. This is the grindstone. I get, you know, the broom, the mortar, and the pestle. So, you know, you're trying to just live a decent life, and you kill it. So, and then the third one is some scars, some subliminal impressions. And, anyway, those are memories of past pleasure and suffering, et cetera. And same thing. They develop fresh cravings and aversions, and then you try to recreate the past pleasurable experiences or avoid the misery that you cause. And, you know, this whole thing is a form of mental torment or suffering. And you constantly lament the loss of past pleasures and you hanker, and then inspired by these memories, you act, and then you get entangled in karma further. And then, now he's going to say only a yogi really understands this vicious cycle here, that pleasure leads to pain. And it says, the vicious cycle causes concern only to the yogi, however, who can recognize it as highly undesirable state of affairs. As the Buddha notes, what other calls pleasure, sukha, the noble ones call dukkha, suffering. A wise person cannot enjoy something sweet if he or she knows it will eventually cause sickness, says Shankara. That's one of the six commentators. A yogi is as sensitive as an eyeball. If a strand of thread falls on the eyeball, says Vyasa, it causes distress. But if it falls on any other part of the body, it is hardly felt at all. So the yogi a little pleasure falls. It's like he feels it. Where others, like if a hair falls on the body, you don't. Similarly, the pain of existence, even in so-called situation of happiness, trouble only the yogi, does not trouble other people. Like Raghunath Das Goswami, he was suffering. If he was the son of the richest man and had all material opulences, he's just trying to get out. Would I try to get out if I was Raghunath Das Goswami? Would I actually say, wow, this is so much suffering? Or would I be in the illusion, wow, this is great. I'm the wealthiest man in West Bengal, I'll use the money for preaching, and therefore I'll buy myself a Learjet. And because I'm doing so much preaching, when I come to the next place, I should stay in a 5-star hotel to relax. But for preaching, because Prabhupada said that people like to hear from rich people. The whole thing. Would I be sensitive as a yogi? I'm just saying, would I be sensitive as a yogi, like a real yogi? He doesn't like the pleasure, actually. And there's few, even among. Prabhupada said, sannyas avoid like social intercourse. We can't be sannyasis in days of yore, but we have a few. I always think of Jagat Waiter's family. Boy, would he be suffering if you gave him a big house and a swimming pool. he'd be miserable. Would I? I have to be honest. It's really, you have to... Now, this is also... others, say the commentators, cannot see the long-term repercussions of activities that produce limited so-called happiness. Consequently, they repeatedly experience the suffering that accrued due to their karma, try to avoid this suffering and pursue happiness, but plant seeds of karma. Now, listen to this analogy. This is like a person running away from a scorpion who gets bit by a poisonous snake, says Fiat. So, you got the karma, and then you're trying to get the pleasure, and then you get suffering. You're trying to avoid the suffering. But how do you try to avoid the suffering? By creating new pleasure. He said, this is like you're trying to avoid the scorpion bite, and you get that. So he says, everything is painful to the ignorant as well, says Vigyanadasya, but they do not realize it. The ignorant also suffer, but they don't realize it. And then he quotes from Vishnu Prana, there is more pain created for a person through spouse, friends, children, income, home, property, and wealth than there is pleasure. Thus, Pantanjali notes that for a wise person, everything is called pain, rather than happiness mixed with pain. Also, fools realize their mistake upon attaining the consequences of the pursuit of pleasure after the event. Vyas continues, whereas for the yogi, pain is evident at the very time of the experience of pleasure. And the fourth item is called chitta-vritti, the agitations of the mind. And it's got to be suffering because in this world, everything is mixed with ignorance and passion. So even if you're in goodness, it's mixed with passion, which is misery, and ignorance, which is illusion. And so what they're saying is you just can't get out of it in this world. And the gunas are always in flux. So even if you're happy, then it changes. And long purport. I'm going to finish soon. And then finally, he says how this is. The commentator said this is similar to the fourfold path of the fourfold, the ninefold, whatever it is, of the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism. But the commentators here, they're not Buddhists. There's, you know, so there's a similarity, but there's a difference, and they go into the difference. Because Buddhism, Vedic thought, I don't know what you call it, whatever the right word is, our whole thing is consciousness. So you'll be happy when you imbibe or dwell in pure consciousness, you know, and not the identification of the body. But for Buddhism, consciousness doesn't exist. Consciousness is dependent on the object. And therefore, they make a brilliant point. But again, Bhikshu argued, in order to reject something, there must be entities, the rejecter and the thing to be rejected. If the notion of Atma becomes the thing to be rejected, who is the rejecter of the notion? What are they rejecting? There's no identity. So, Hariharananda puts it, if one aspires to liberation by thinking, let me be free from misery by suspending the activities of the mind, there will remain a pure me, free from the pangs of misery. The self behind or behind the mind is the real experience of the process. If one denies the ultimate existence of such an agent, then one is faced with the often marshaled question, for whose sake is liberation sought? They don't believe in the soul, so why liberate? Who's becoming liberated? Why are you getting liberated? Vyas puts forth the position of yoga in distinction to the Buddhist view. Consciousness, Purushas, is an eternal and immutable, the subject of experience, and liberation involves detachment from the object's experience in the form of the evolution of Purusha. So, so many people today embrace Buddhism, but they have no idea what it is. Anybody like to say hello? Anybody hearing something? Anybody like to say hello? Anybody like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Samia? Is that you?
I think that was her.
I think that was her. I hear Gail. Anybody else I can hear?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Is that Govardhan?
Yes, Maharaj.
It's so nice. I have like a steady group. They're like the postman in New York, rain, shine, anything, they're always on. Anybody else like to say hello? Someone is playing with their phone. Anyway, I have to go soon anyway. But those of you that are steady, thank you very much. And Leti, please send the numbers so I can see how many people. Bunch of culprit to just start with this in the leadership.